Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Rachel Berkovitz coming to you from Jerusalem. This is Unit 6 of 20, where we're learning together all the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. Last week, we finished learning the first chapter, and this week, we're going to look at the second chapter. As we spoke about last week, the first two chapters deal with the ritual performance of sanctifying the new moon. And we saw the main theme last week about this ritual of Kiddush HaChodesh, representing something about the relationship between the Jewish nation and the divine. In this week, we're going to continue with the theme. However, we're going to be focusing more on the Jewish people's relationship to the authority of the court system, the central body, which is where this sanctification happens. Chapter 2 has a really interesting structure. When you first look at it, it seems like many things are out of order and it's very haphazardly put together. It doesn't follow, if we're talking about this ritual of Kiddush HaChodesh, it doesn't follow the chronological order of how this ritual would work. We actually saw a similar phenomenon happening in the first chapter, where it first talked about the shlichim, it first talked about the messengers that go out after the sanctification happens, and then it backtracked and talked about the witnesses that have to come and report to the court before the sanctification happens. Here, our chapter is going to open with a Mishnah that's going to continue talking about the witnesses, and many people might argue that it really should be connected to the first chapter, and we have to talk about that. And then it's going to jump forward again to discussing how I'm going to get the information to the rest of the country, to the rest of the Jewish people, once I know what the month is. And then it jumps back to the witnesses again. Then it talks about the actual sanctification that happens in the court. And then it jumps back to the witnesses again, which would happen before the sanctification. And when you look at it like this, it seems like there's just sort of a bunch of things stuck together. But once we start to look at it more in depth, which of course we will do together, you see that there is quite a clear linguistic structure and connection. Running throughout all the Mishnayot, from Mishnah 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, we're going to see certain words that are going to connect each Mishnah to the other. Even Mishnayot that seem to be disparate and talking about opposite things will have connecting words between them. That's thing number one we're going to see. Thing number two, I already told you that the last Mishnah of chapter 1 and the last Mishnah of chapter 2, which we haven't gotten to, are going to have linguistic links and themes to them. But not only that, the last Mishnah of chapter 2 is directly linked to the first Mishnah of chapter 2, right? So chapter 2's first Mishnah, which we're going to read in a moment together, which looks like it maybe should be linked to chapter 1, really creates a nice structure because the theme of it and the ending of chapter 2 are going to match. And in both of those, we'll see that there's going to be a challenge to the authority of the court system. In Mishnah 1 and 2, the challenge to the authority is going to be coming sort of from the outside, pushing in. Whereas in the end of the chapter, in Mishnayot 8 and 9, we're going to see that the challenge to the authority of the Beit Din is going to be coming from within the court system itself, from within the court challenging the authority of the head of the Beit Din. And we're going to have to see how those two challenges play out and whose authority is accepted and how one goes about accepting that authority. And I would say that one of the main themes we're going to see, we're obviously see, as we saw in the first chapter, there are a number of different themes running through, but is sort of a conversation about how the court is solidifying its authority and what the relationship of the court is with the nation as a whole, right? That theme we already saw being discussed in the first chapter, and we're going to continue it in this chapter. Okay, so that's the overview. Let's jump into our learning. So, Mishnah Aleph, Im Einan Makirim Oto, if they don't know him. And this word im, right, if, right, we're starting a whole chapter with if, it's like kind of like we're in the middle of a sentence. And if you remember, or if you want to look back at the last Mishnah of the chapter before, the last Mishnah of the chapter before had a number of im clauses, if clauses, right? If he's worried he's going to be attacked, then he can bring makelot with him, rods with him. And if it's going to be a far journey, he can bring food with him, right? There are a number of if statements here. And the him was always the aid, the person that witnessed the new moon. And now here too, we open with an if statement. If they don't know him. Okay, and so the they seems to be, as if we proceed, the court. And the him is the witness. So someone shows up in court, right, at the central court authority to give testimony, and the court doesn't know him. Now, this might link to a theme that we talked about earlier and where it's going to unfold, like, is he trustworthy? Is he someone I'm supposed to know? Is he someone who might know things? And the Mishnah is going to explain why suddenly I'm really concerned with that. And here, it seems like the trustworthiness is being discussed here and didn't seem to be the theme of the last chapter, although we raised it as a possibility. So what unfolds? So if they don't know him, what can happen? Mashlichim acher imo lahaido. So they send another with him to testify about him. So now we have the word mashlichim, send, right? And that's a word that we had in the first chapter, and we're actually going to have it in a moment again. Originally, the sending was from the courts outwards, messengers to tell the Jewish people what the holiday was, when the holiday was. Here, it's different. Maybe the lower court, the smaller court, the community in which the aid is coming from, they send with him another aid to testify about him, who he is. Right. So I have one person that's testifying about the moon, and I have another person that's testifying about the reliability of the person. And now we're going to find out why. Why do we need to care about this? And it says, "Birishona hayu mekablim edut haChodesh mikol adam." At first, the courts would accept testimony about the new moon from every person, mikol adam. Right? And this phrase, mikol adam, fits with what we learned in the last chapter, that there was sort of an expansive opening, wide catchment to be most inclusive of whoever wants to come to testify about the new moon. And so they're saying, yes, Barishona, that was our goal. At the first, that was our goal, that we wanted to have a wide catchment area and to be inclusive of everyone. But now we're learning that actually it's gotten limited. It's not anyone. It's just you have to be someone who knows someone who can vouch for you. And so why is that? Mishikikolu haminim hikinu shelo yehu mekablim ela minha makirim. When the minim, the sectarians, ruined things, and we have to understand this, the courts decreed, that they would only accept witnesses from those that they knew. Okay, so we have to unpack this. This is very interesting. Now, I just want to say one more thing before we unpack it about the link to the Mishnah before. The Tosefta and the commentators understand that this issue of knowing who this person is so important that even on Shabbat, remember all those Mishnayot in chapter one were about on Shabbat, he can bring his sticks. On Shabbat, he can bring his food. On Shabbat, you can carry him or lead him on the donkey. And here, and so we had other people, we had the support staff that was included who could break Shabbat. And here too, the understanding is that this person that's going to go along with him, the person that didn't see the new moon, but just knows the person who did see the new moon, even he can travel and transgress Shabbat to do that, right? This is how important this is to vouch for the person. And so why do we need to vouch for the person? We need to vouch the person. Originally, we didn't care. Any Jew that showed up was accepted and great. But there seems to be a time when the sectarians tried to start messing things up. So what is this referring to? It's referring to that in the time when the temple was standing, there are a number of different sects, groups of Jews that have slightly different belief systems. And the rabbinic Judaism stems from the Pharisees, the Prushim. But there was another well-known group specifically who had a lot of authority in the temple and was made up of priests. And I wonder if these priests are possibly linked to the priests we saw in the first chapter, which are called the Sadducees, the Tzedukim. And one of the main disagreements that these two groups had, surprise, surprise, was regarding the calendar. They had different reads on the Torah regarding when certain of the holidays should be. This was a dispute about parshanut, about exegesis of the Torah. One of the most famous ones is regarding when you start counting the Omer, when in the relationship, in the calendar, in the spring, do I start counting the 7 weeks that's going to lead me to the Chag HaShavuot, right? Chag HaShavuot doesn't have a date in the Torah. It only says that it's 7 weeks from whatever the start point is. And in the Torah, in Sefer Vayikra, in Leviticus, it says the start point is Mimacharat HaShabbat, from the day after Shabbat. Now, the Sadducees think that the word Shabbat means Shabbat, and they need the starting to start on a Sunday. The Pharisees have a different read, and this is a different shiur that I'm not giving now, a different class. They think it's from the day after Pesach. And we won't get into why they have the two different reads. They're based on other psukim that exist in the Torah, but they do. And so the understanding of our Mishnah here is that the Sadducees very much wanted it to be that the calendar would work out, that Rosh Chodesh Nisan would fall on a Shabbat. Because if Rosh Chodesh Nisan falls on a Shabbat, then the 15th of Nisan is 2 weeks later. That will fall on a Shabbat. And then Pesach is for 1 week, and then Pesach will end on a Shabbat. And then the day after Pesach ends will be a Sunday, a Macharat HaShabbat, right? Or even according to the way the Pharisees count, if I am counting from the day after Pesach, the first day of Pesach, if Pesach is a Shabbat, then my counting will still start on a Sunday. And so the calculation of the Pharisees will line up with the calculations of the Sadducees. If you followed that, you followed that. If you didn't, all you need to know is that they have a dispute about how to count. And so one group might have an agenda to make Rosh Chodesh fall out on a specific day of the week that would help their agenda be fulfilled. And so seemingly what happened, and we have other sources that seem to testify this, that the Tzukim would send false messengers. They would either themselves or hire people to come to the court and claim that they saw the new moon on the day that worked well for their calendar count, right? And then because they have these like active spies or people trying to mess up the courts, things got a little tricky. Like, if the guy's testifying that it's going to be on this Saturday to help it be on the Sunday, do I believe him because that's when he really saw it? Or am I suspicious that he is a Sadducee? And so, therefore, the courts had to make this takana, right? This had to do a fix. They had to do a decree. And we saw this word, l'hatkin and hitkinha. We had takanat ha-mizbeach, and we had takanat ha-moadot, right? Those things were good takanot, right? We affixed the calendar, and we were able to affix that the altar could get its sacrifice for the new moon on the right day. Here we need to fix things so that we can fix the calendar and fix the sacrifices. I need to make sure I fix that the Edim come, who are the right Edim, who are going to give me trustworthy information. So I have to make a rabbinic decree about the rules, and I have to tweak the rules a little bit. So originally the rules were that we accepted from everyone. Kiddush HaChodesh is open to everyone. That's part of the premise. However, and I want to remind you that Kiddush HaChodesh is supposed to be unifying the Jewish people. We're going to see that theme come in a second, right? We want to be connected. We all want to be on the same page. But now we find out some sort of dirty laundry information that the Jewish people aren't actually that unified. And there are actually different groups among the Jewish people that are not working towards unification, or maybe working towards unification of everyone according to their view, but not respecting that other people have other views. And so these minim, these sectarians, these Sadducees are trying to mess up the other groups. And so there's this, because there's this disharmony amongst the Jewish people surrounding the calendar, and because I want unification of the calendar so much according to my way, to define my way as right, Rabbinic Judaism has to do a fix, and they cannot accept Edim from anyone. Instead, if you're someone who's unknown, you better come with someone who is known, right? They would only accept people that they knew. And if they don't know you, you have to have protexia. You have to have someone who knows you, right? Right? And we have things like this today, right? You want to get your CV to someone. It works better if you know someone in the company and that person can vouch for you and say, oh, this person's a good person. Listen to what they have to say, right? Same thing here. You needed to send someone along who knew the high court to say, oh, Shmero Belal, he's a decent guy. He's one of us. Don't worry. He's telling you the truth, right? obviously human beings can make mistakes, and we're going to see that happen in the course of our chapter. But this is referring to people that are actively trying to create a mess up, a kill cool. This word kill cool, ruined, we're going to also see in the last chapter of Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, where we're going to see a different type of kill cool happening, not on purpose, but because of an accident. So that's Mishnah number one. So we have to change the halakha due to this divisiveness within the Jewish people. And Mishnah number two is going to continue the same theme. And we're going to see similarity of language. Berishona, at first. Right? So now we have two Mishnayot that start Berishona. There's also an interesting play that's going to happen in this chapter. Right? We opened up Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, talking about that there are four Rosh Hashanim, that there are four heads of the year. In chapter two, I noticed that the word Rosh is going to be used four different ways, and we'll have to pay attention to that, right? Not talking about the heads of years, but talking about heads of other things or firsts of other things. So here's our first of the first. We have the word Rishona mentioned. At first, Hayu Masi'im Masu'ot, Mishakakalu Hakutim, Hitkinu Shiu Shluchim Yotzim. So at first, they would raise up masuot, torches. And Mishnah 4 and 3 and 4 of this chapter are going to explain this procedure in depth. So don't worry if you don't get it. But at the moment, we're finding out that there's somehow like a torch communication that would happen. And this is where we switch a little. We're now switching to post-sanctification of the new month. We know which day is Rosh Chodesh. And now we have to get the information out to the rest of the nation. So we already heard about sending messengers on foot or on horseback to get the information out. But we're learning here that there was another way that they got the information out. It was by lighting torches. And we're going to see a procedure where someone's going to stand on the top of the hill and wave a torch, and then it's going to connect to another person who's going to wave a torch. And we're going to see this in a second. But at first, this is how they used to do it. But then when the Kutim ruined things, we have to explain who they are in 1 second. They made another decree, Hitkinu, they made another fix, that they would send out Shiushluchim Yotzim, that the messengers would go out, that people on foot or on horseback would go out. Okay, so we need to understand this as well. Now, the Kutim are a specific group, a specific one of the sects, and it's not the Sadducees. The Kutim are identified with the Samaritans, the Shomronim, which is a group that was sort of like auxiliary or attached. They're mentioned in the Tanakh to the Jewish people in some way. But so the Jews, but quasi not Jews, partially Jews, seem to have similar practices. They're mentioned throughout the Mishnah. They say brachot, they don't say brachot, they do certain rituals. How do I relate to them? They're sort of on this border of the liminality between Jew and not Jew. Which is interesting if we remember we had people like this in the first chapter as well. But one thing about the Samaritans, their messing things up seems to be a little bit even more than the messing up that the Sadducees did. The Sadducees wanted to mess up the date of the new moon, which is a pretty big mess up because then it's going to mess up the date of the holidays. Now, it sounds like here that the Kutim want to mess up the date of the holiday, but they are messing up these torches that are going to be lit. Now, the torches, which we're going to explain in a second, so I know I'm talking about something that I haven't yet explained because the Mishnah hasn't yet explained it. The torches, I said, are what connects the central Beit Din going out, spreading out to the rest of the nation. So not only do they want to mess up the date, but part of what they want to mess up, and it seems like what it means is that they would light torches to signal the Rosh Chodesh on the wrong night or something like that, right? That they don't actually have to mess up the actual date that the court declares, right? That Stukim wanted to send false edim and mess up the date that the court actually declared. Now, it could be the court will declare the date that the Samaritans don't want. That's not a problem for them because, fine, maybe in Yerushalayim they'll know the right date, but then they just can climb up on a hilltop on the date that they want and start flashing the torch, I'm waving my hand here, you can't see me doing it, right? Now, the person who's far away can't see which type of person is flashing the torch. Does he have, like, on his shirt a little sign meaning I'm a messenger of the court? Or does he have a little sign that says I'm a Samaritan? You can't see the person, you just see the torch. So they could mess the whole thing up, right? On the night of the 29th, they could light a torch, or the light of the 30th, they could light a torch saying that the court had sanctified the new month, even if the court hadn't done it. And they could spread that message out to the entire diaspora, right? And the diaspora has no way to know that the torch that's being signaled to them is a mistaken torch. So not only do they mess up the date, they also mess up the connection between the central authority in Jerusalem, or the central authority in Yavne, and the rest of the nation. So there's like a double mess up of a breakdown between the Jewish people that the Samaritans are messing up with their torch going. I read one person that said part of the reason they want to mess up this central authority from Jerusalem is that the Samaritans feel that it's not Jerusalem that is holy, but Har Gerizim that is central and holy to them. Still to today, on Har Gerizim, there is a Samaritan community, and they sacrifice the Paschal Ram according to their count of the calendar. And you can go visit and see. Many Pardes students have gone to see it in the past. That's part of their belief system and their agenda system is what causes them to want to specifically mess this aspect up. So now we're finding out at the beginning of chapter 2 that this beautiful picture of the unified Jewish people isn't so beautiful and isn't so unified, surprise, surprise. And there are a number of wrenches being thrown in the midst that Rabbinic Judaism is having to deal with the punches and roll with the punches to try to not be deterred by them. And so we're going to learn a bit more as this unfolds, and we learn a bit more about what the Masuot are, which we will continue next time.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning, and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.